Vasudeva Angri,
Vasudeva Angri,
the lotus feet of the Lord,
Anujana,
by constant remembrance,
Paribringhata,
expanded,
Ranghasa,
with great velocity,
Bhakya,
in devotion.
Nirmakshita,
subsided.
Ashesha,
unlimited.
Vishaya,
dint.
Dushana,
conception.
Arjuna,
translation. Arjuna's constant remembrance of the lotus feet of the Lord, Shri Krishna, rapidly increased his devotion, and as a result, all the trash in his thoughts subsided. Purport. Material desires in the mind are the trash of material contamination. By such contamination, the living being is faced with so many compatible and incompatible things that discourage the very existence of spiritual identity. Birth after birth, the conditioned soul is entrapped with so many pleasing and displeasing elements, which are all false and temporary. They accumulate due to our reactions to material desires. But when we get in touch with the transcendental Lord and his variegated energies by devotional service, the naked forms of all material desires become manifest, and the intelligence of the living being is pacified in its true color. As soon as Arjuna turned his attention towards the instructions of the Lord, as they are inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita, his true color of eternal association with the Lord became manifest, and thus he felt free from all material contaminations. Translation again. Arjuna's constant remembrance of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna rapidly increased his devotion, and as a result, all the trash in his thoughts subsided. Om Gyanar Timanam Dasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshuna Tamina Tasvashya. This is very troubling, the trash in the thoughts. The gross actions are based on the subtle. Because the thoughts are trashy, the actions become trashy. So how to cleanse that trash in the mind? As Prabhupada writes in the purport here, material desires in the mind are the trash of material contamination. By such contamination, the living being is faced with so many compatible and incompatible things that discourage the very existence of spiritual identity. Krishna says the same thing a different way in Bhagavad Gita. Purusha prapatisto hi bhunte prapatijatya. Karanam gula sangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. The living entity wanders throughout life, meeting various circumstances of good and bad, compatible and incompatible. This is all due to the association with the modes of nature. As you've explained so many times, you're not just wandering through life in a neutral atmosphere. No, you are wandering through the various modes of nature, picking up contaminations. And according to your interaction with the modes of nature, you involve yourself in various circumstances which appear to be compatible or incompatible. But actually, it's all incompatible. What is happiness? What is distress? Material life means distress, no matter how it seems sometimes to be nice. It's all distress because material life means separation from Krishna, forgetfulness of Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that material life is like a salt mine. If someone throws you into a salt mine, wherever you taste, it's salty. But will you insanely say, oh, this is good salt, this is bad salt, this is sweet salt, this is sour salt? It's all salty. You're in a salt mine. But in material life, with your mind, you can concoct, oh, this is sweet salt, this is sour salt. The intelligent person knows it's all salt. So that's why we say material existence is a mental disease. You're imagining, you're hallucinating, and these hallucinations are brought about by contact with the modes of material nature. Just like, you know, when people take drugs, LSD or ecstasy or whatever they're taking these days, it changes their mind around by contact with the drug. Or when people drink alcohol, it changes them. They can drink and go to rugby matches. Or they can drink and take drugs and go to a rave club and do things they normally wouldn't do. And they want that to be also. They want to do things they wouldn't normally do. Similarly, by contact with the drugs of material existence, the modes of nature, you see things you wouldn't normally see, and you do things you wouldn't normally do. This is what it means when Krishna says, Karanam Guna Sangosya Sarasad Yoni Janrasu. You follow the ways of life. What does that mean, the ways of life? Contamination by the modes of nature. And because of that contact with Sri Guna Mayi, you hallucinate. It's amazing how longing to relish the modes of nature. When you understand what the modes of nature are, then your detachment can begin. That's why Krishna, in the beginning of the 14th chapter of the Gita, describes knowledge of the modes as liberating. And if you understand them, then Krishna says you can taste nectar even in this very lifetime. You'll put an end to your birth and death, and you can taste nectar in this very lifetime if you can understand how the modes of nature are working and presenting various compatible, incompatible things. But actually, it's all incompatible. But we see a future for ourselves in the modes of nature. We see opportunity. We see chances for fulfillment and satisfaction. It's like looking into a desert and seeing water. It's amazing how what we see in the material world, this is not there. It's a great realization to understand it's not there. But because, you know, we're drugged up by the three modes, you know, we see accordingly. We hallucinate accordingly. So just like there's different drugs, you know, there's alcohol, ecstasy or LSD or marijuana, so there are different modes of nature, but they have different effects. So material nature as a whole then is like a drug dealer. It offers you different types of intoxication, hallucination. And according to which drug dealer you bump into on the street, you know, that's what kind of product you get. So, how you wander around in material life in association with the modes of nature gives you certain kinds of experiences. And you take it all as factual. Oh, this is a good situation. This is a bad situation. This is compatible. This is incompatible. And you see what is not there. You see opportunities for satisfaction, for fulfillment. I want satisfying sense gratification, a fulfilling job, meaningful relationships, an appropriate society. I want peace and brotherhood around me. You see all these things, and they're not there. Sometimes, do they have a zoo in Wellington? You ever been to the zoo? Is it a good sankirtan spot? Sometimes you can go to the zoo and just walk around the middle of the zoo and then tell yourself, I want all the animals to be peacefully fulfilled and satisfied. I want them all to say intelligent things that have great consequence. You should do that sometimes. And that's just ridiculous as you walking around the city of Wellington thinking, I want all the human beings to be peaceful and satisfied and fulfilled and say intelligent things that have real consequences. So you make that test. Another thing you can do, if you're feeling overrun by material desires, you can also go to the zoo and meditate on the animals. What kind of animals do they have in the zoo? You been there? What do they have there?
Lions and just the usual animals you have at the zoo. They have great big ones like elephants and sort of thing.
There you can go. You know, the Bhagavatam will teach you how to meditate on the animals in the zoo. They have elephants.
No.
How there's lions.
Yeah, lions and some tigers and all that sort of thing.
You think it's great to be a lion, the king of the jungle? Lions, by the laws of nature, can only have sex once a year. So powerful. King of the jungle. Beautiful mane and hair. So from the human standard, the lions are in a very, you know, horrible position. What else? Tigers? Tigers, you know, in the jungle, they have a tough time. Do you think all the animals just come before the tiger and say, oh, you are a tiger, you can eat us for a meal? No. They all flee the tiger. So the tiger has all this speed and strength, but it's very difficult to get a meal. Because everybody in the jungle knows the tiger's out. No one wants to be, no one will volunteer to be eaten by a tiger. So therefore the tiger, it has to, when it finally gets some food, it's got to stash it. And hope that it will be there when it comes back to nibble in a few days. So this is the irony of material nature. Also, did you know that, as Prabhupada explained, that in the jungle, there's a bird that follows the tiger whenever the tiger goes out to hunt? You heard this, Puya? How do you know? Anyway, there's a bird, and as soon as the tiger goes out to prowl at night, the bird follows and makes a sound.
Bow, bow, bow.
And all the animals know, oh, that means the tiger's coming. It ruins all the fun of the tiger. You think, oh, it's a tiger, so strong and fast, you know, it can get whatever it wants. Just pounce on anything. No, nature frustrates it. Nature arranges that a special tiger bird follows it, sending off all the animals. This is the way it is. You're a lion, beautiful golden mane, full of strength and virility. No, nature says, sorry, you're a lion with strength and virility, but the way the system is for lions, you only have sex once a year. What other animals they have there? What? Monkeys? They have monkeys there?
Monkeys
you can watch. They chatter and are so active. For what purpose? Nothing. Waste of energy. Chattering all day long. Swinging from one branch to another. So active. But no meaning to it. Waste of time. If you were in the jungle, you'd see the real business of the male monkeys, why they swing from tree to tree. Because every male monkey has a dozen female monkeys in neighboring trees. They just swing from tree to tree. And it's just so much chatter. Monkeys are always just chattering. It's all just meaningless activity. What other animals? Birds. Birds, the Bhagavatam points out, you think they're so beautiful, they can spread their wings and fly, but they're always in anxiety. You ever see a bird eat? Complete anxiety. You can watch the ducks. If you're at New Barshan, you can see the ducks. You ever watch the ducks? And Ame and Shukadeva and Barshana feed the ducks. You know, there's always a pack of them. And so one duck, the fortunate duck who first gets the piece of bread, it picks it up with its beak, and it tries to gobble it down, but it can't eat in peace because the other ducks are immediately trying to take it out of its mouth, you know, rip the bread out of its mouth. So it's constant anxiety. They can't even have a peaceful meal, you know. Picks up a piece of bread and eats it. They try to swallow it. But meanwhile, the other ducks are ripping it out of its mouth. It's got to run while it's trying to swallow it. I watch. It smells very... It can't sit down and have a good meal. It's, you know, it's trying to swallow the bread and the other, and it's running at the same time and looking here and there fearfully, you know, like a rugby player carrying the ball and having to watch who's going to tackle it, you know. That's what it's like. And you see the peacocks. You ever seen a peacock before? The male peacocks. Why do the male peacocks spread their plumes?
To attract
the male. Of course. That's the whole purpose of it. And they're so vain, peacocks. If you have a shiny car and there are peacocks around, watch out, because what will happen? The peacocks will just stand in front of it all day watching themselves. They can see their reflection in the car. Or else they'll start pecking the car because they think it's another peacock and they get envious. So they start pecking the, you know, their own reflection thinking it's another peacock. Who is this peacock as beautiful as me? So, you want to see the result of material desires, you just walk around in the zoo. Human society is like a zoo. You get the same potential for peace and fulfillment and satisfaction in a zoo as you will get in human society. But because we're in contact with the modes of material nature, we see opportunity for us in the material world. This is a big contamination. This is our penalty for forgetting Krishna. Forgetting Krishna and forgetting Krishna's attractiveness. Instead, we look and see opportunity and attraction in the material world. And that's the cause of our problems. We don't want any restraints in pursuing our material dream. I've got to follow that dream. If you tell that to people today, they'll compliment you. Oh, yes, you really got a good positive attitude. Yes, follow your dream. It's like we talked about career counseling before. Some of you have been to career counseling. What would you like to be? What kind of job would you like to have? Now we'll give you a test. Let's see what skills you have. What interests you? As if society automatically just, you know, has a job for you that meets your interests. It's such cheating. Sometimes it is like that. Just like, for example, in Australia after World War II. Because during the war, they were simply manufacturing military items. But then after the war, there was, you know, huge neglected consumer market. So, you know, the people, you know, were ready to spend on sense gratification again. The war was over, but there weren't enough products for them. So anybody can get a job. You could basically, you could dictate what kind of job you wanted. So that's when all this propaganda started. I remember also when I was, you know, a young boy in the early 50s, it was like that in America too. If you had the right kind of body, then, you know, you could pick whatever job you wanted. And there's so much propaganda. Which career is good for you? But this is just the trick of Maya, because then as soon as the employment needs of the capitalists are met, then they close the door. Capitalists don't want to be at the mercy of the workers. I was talking to one 80-year-old man in Australia, and he told me what Australia was like before the war, during the Depression. He said his brother applied for a job as an office messenger. So he went to apply for the job, and when he got there, 150 persons were waiting in line for a job as an office messenger. And he had a job, an ordinary menial job, but he had to work, like 70 hours a week. But he was so thankful, so happy, I've got a job. So the employers then, they just demanded whatever they wanted because it was depression. 150 people standing in line to be an office boy, office messenger. So the employers were in complete control, and so they just, if you just moved your eyelashes the wrong way, they could fire you and immediately, in 2 seconds, get endless people to apply for the same foolish job. And you had to do whatever they said, work as long as they wanted. You were just so happy to get a job. So this old man was telling me what the enjoyment was back then. Yeah. They would work so hard, and then Sundays, besides going to church, everyone did that ritual, went to church for an hour. What would they do? And all the family would just put on their best clothes and go for a walk in the town. That was the thrill of the week. Just go for a walk in the town. No, nowhere special. Just go for a walk in the town, the family together. That was the big pleasure. No movies, no TV, no this, no that. People just didn't have money. Nor was there all this junk they had to choose from today for entertainment. But then what happened after the war? After the war, after World War II, there was the neglected consumer market. The people had money, but there was no consumer products to buy. So then, in order to manufacture all these consumer items, workers were needed, but workers were scarce. There weren't enough of them to fulfill the needs of the capitalists. So therefore, the workers were in control. They could demand whatever they wanted. They could pick whatever job they wanted. And of course, what happens when workers are in the controlling position? What do they want to do at work? Right. That's exactly what went on, you know. They knew the guy couldn't fire them. The employer was so desperate to get somebody to work for him. And he had to compete against all the other employers. Because there was this huge boom to satisfy the consumer market with, you know, TVs and irons and household things. And so, but there weren't enough workers. So the workers said, yeah, pay me a lot. And, you know, I'll do nothing. So then the man explained to me, how did the employer strike back? Who knows? I don't think he can teach you this kind of history, has he? What? Before that. That's recent, but before that.
Oh, they imported things from foreign.
Exactly. I said, all right, you guys think you got us over the barrel because there's a shortage of workers in Australia? We're going to bring in the foreigners. We'll bring in the Italians, the Irish, the Greeks. And that's what they did. And they drove all the wages down, and that way the capitalists got the superior position again. Mm-hmm. And now recently, of course, you know, it's computerization and all sorts of things like that. You see, capitalists, meaning, you know, industry owners, corporation owners, they don't want, the worst thing is to be at the mercy of your labor. The best thing for a capitalist is how to always be in a position to dictate to the laborers. Make it so that the laborers never want to strike because they're so fearful they'll lose their job. So these booms and busts go on continually of the economy. So we're seeing the remnants of a boom right now where people still think, I'm going to get a fulfilling job. What job do you want? What do you like to do? That's fading fast, though. But this is what material nature tells us. What would you like from me, Maya tells you? How would you like to be fulfilled? What are your desires? Oh, you have that desire? Don't worry, I'll satisfy it. And the motive passion agitates you. Oh, you're feeling some burning in the heart. Go for it. Do something to satisfy yourself. Arrange. Manage. Organize to satisfy your desires. Then you're looked at upon as a very competent person. You organize. You had a plan to arrange for your satisfaction. Oh, very good. and you were patient and very determined to satisfy your desires. And you're given the Maya Medal of Honor. Everyone will approve of that these days. So all this hallucination is brought about by contamination. Seeing into material nature what's not there. And of course, not only do we have to cope with the current opportunities that Maya offers, but also our very bodies are repositories or concentrations of sinful desires from the past. So you've got to deal with the present hallucinations that you're seeing of opportunities for sinful life, and then the very body itself is a mechanism of sin. It's composed of that. The body is composed of ignorance and lust and envy, so many things like that, as a reaction to your past life. So just see, material life means you're saddled with a machine, you're damned with a machine, which is the consequence of your past life, and with that machine you're damned with, you get even more implicated with your present circumstances. So just see what's going on. The body is full of sinful desires. That's bad enough. But then the atmosphere is also sinful. So you're getting provocation from your own body and mind as well as your surrounding atmosphere. How are you going to survive all that? It's hopeless from the material point of view. But it is not that Krishna is cruel and just lets the sincere living entities suffer.
No.
There's always a chance given to escape all this. And now you're seeing Arjuna demonstrating how to escape. Arjuna actually has no problem, but he's going through all this just to show us what it's like. How to get out of these problems. Arjuna's constant remembrance of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna rapidly increased his devotion, and as a result, all the trash in his thoughts subsided. Arjuna is showing you how to do it. This is transcendental meditation, the real transcendental meditation. Meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. When you look at the deities, you're supposed to first look at the feet and then work your glance upwards to the smiling face. But the main worship is the feet. This is explained in second canon of Bhagavatam. In fact, the very Bhagavatam itself is like that. The tenth canon is the smiling face. The first few cantos, they are the feet of the Lord. First and second cantos are like the feet of the Lord. So you start with the first canto, the lotus feet of the Lord, and gradually lift your gaze to the lotus face in the tenth canto. Similarly, meditation on the spiritual master is on the feet. That's why you sing Sri Guru Charana Padma. That is the way to be spiritually respectful. I remember when Srila Prabhupada came into my office at the BBT. So, of course, I was standing up to greet him, and I just looked at his feet. Kept my gaze fixed at his feet. Some devotees were telling him, "Oh, this is Dave Amrita. He's graduating from such and such university. Very prestigious." I just was looking at Prabhupada's feet, just, "I am so fallen, please save me." So transcendental meditation begins at the feet of the Lord. When Krishna says, "Always think of me, manmana bhava madbhakta," he gives that instruction twice in Bhagavad Gita. He's telling you, it is possible to remember the form of the Lord. Through serving Krishna, the form of the Lord starts to become imprinted on your in your mind. And you can recall, just like you have some beloved, so-called beloved person, or beloved relative, or child. You can just close your eyes and you can think of that person. Some of you during your brief affairs, romantic affairs, you remember closing your eyes and thinking of that person. close your eyes and thinking of memories. Or you haven't had that experience. Maybe you had some family member you were very attached to. Just, you close your eyes and think of it. Actually, that ability is meant for Krishna. You can close your eyes in any situation and think of the lotus feet of the Lord. That's transcendental meditation. And then gradually, as that meditation intensifies, you can see the whole form of the Lord up to the smiling face. And in this way, all the trash in the consciousness subsides. Birth after birth, the conditioned soul is entrapped with so many pleasing and displeasing elements, which are all false and temporary. They accumulate due to our reactions to material desires. But when we get in touch with the transcendental Lord and his variegated energies by devotional service, the naked forms of all material desires become manifest. I think we were explaining this yesterday or the day before. Through devotional service, you can see what is what. So half the battle against material desires is being able to see them. In the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, you can be bewildered if you don't take guidance. You can be bewildered because you don't see the enemy that's punching you. But by performing devotional service under guidance, you get the ability to see the naked forms of these desires. They suddenly, you know, appear in front of you. What's going on? What's bothering you? But in the beginning, you can't see that. Generally, the first few years in Krishna consciousness are, you can easily become bewildered. You know, you just don't, you know, you can't see what's jumping you, what's harassing you. So you're trying to fight back, you're throwing punches here and there. You know, you're getting exhausted. I'm trying. Why am I still being attacked? And what's happening? Yeah, well, what's going on? If you have good guidance, you can make it through all that. You have to rely on others. They can point out, you see what's nailing you? This is what's attacking you. You can't see. You're throwing punches here and there. I'm trying to defend myself. I'm trying to be staunch. By your misuse of independence, you can become dull again and not see. But if you're actually performing devotional service under guidance, you develop the ability, by Krishna's grace, to see the naked forms of the material desires. Gradually, in front of your eyes, the enemy is manifest. All right, now you can see me. I'm your old friend, Lust. I was hiding before, but now because of your service, you can see me right in front of your eyes. And that's half the battle, to see the enemy. Then you can start slugging and connecting. But it's very frustrating not to see the enemy. Well, I'm just being sincere. I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I'm doing devotional service. I'm taking prasadam, of course. And why am I being attacked by all these things? And if you're proud, then you say, well, since I am doing all the things I should be doing, I'm completely all right. My intelligence is clear. Got it all figured out. Got my plan. Meanwhile, you're just being pounded right and left. But through bhakti, when done properly under guidance, you develop the ability. Krishna gives you this ability. Because Krishna is pleased by your devotional service, by your humble, submissive devotional service, Krishna gives you the ability to see the material desires. And they just materialize like out of nowhere in front of you. Then you can see your old friends right in front of you. They disappear. Here I am, your old buddy, Mr. Lust, Mr. Anger, Mr. Envy. I'm right in front of you. Then you can start to, you know, fight. Seeing the enemy is half the battle. It's very painful. fighting against an enemy you don't see. But when you see the enemy, just like recently in the war in Kosovo, at first it looked like the Serbs were going to get away from it, get away with it, because although the U.S. and NATO had all the superior aircraft, they couldn't, because of the mountainous terrain, they couldn't see the enemy, and they didn't want to fly down low enough to risk being shot down. So in spite of having such sophisticated aircraft, they couldn't be that effective. But somehow or other later in the battle, they developed the means how to detect the enemy. And so then that's when Serbia said, okay, we've had enough, because the bombing started to become very effective. So, similarly, your bombing of Maya becomes very effective when Krishna gives you the ability to see the targets. The danger in the beginning stages is pride.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
And the danger in the later stages is pride.
Well, I've been around for so long, I know what Maya is.
Krishna doesn't like pride. Pride comes before a fall. As soon as we think, yeah, I got it all together, these other devotees, they're just not together, I'm together. Oh, glory to Lord Chaitanya, yeah, me, my great service, I'm so intelligent, I'm so renounced, I'm so pure. Then Krishna arranges a nice little hurdle for you to trip over. Oh, what happened? What happened? Oh no, will everyone think of me? I was so great, and now I've tripped. Oh no, I better go away then than to be humiliated in front of all the devotees. That's what happens. I was such a big, big personality. I've tripped, just like all the other people I used to criticize. Oh no, I can't go back to their midst. And Maya says, right, 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 you can't go back. Just grab a girl or grab a guy and fade away somewhere and sort yourself out. And then you can go back after you sort yourself out. I'll give you that chance, Maya tells you. I'll give you an opportunity. Sort yourself out, don't worry. I won't bother you too much. No, that's just the lure. Yeah. Me and her. Him and me. We'll just, you know, fade away into my habit and sort ourselves out, and then we'll come back when the devotees are more appreciating. Exactly. When the devotees are more appreciating, then we'll come back. So when we're proud, then we hit these hurdles. But if we humble ourselves, then there is learning. Then you can regroup and regather your energies if you just humble yourself. All right, I got puffed up. I'm not as great as I thought. I'm just like everyone else. I'm a refugee of Kali Yuga. Then Krishna says, all right, you learned your lesson. We are actually just refugees from Kali Yuga. There's nothing great about us. But in association with Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, Krishna uses us, and that's Krishna's unlimited mercy, because we have no qualifications. You know what a refugee is? Sometimes in New Zealand they take in refugees. I think they just took in some from Kosovo. Yeah, just to show how humanitarian they are. We don't spend money on military. We don't spend huge sums of money on military development, but we do take in refugees from troubled parts of the world. It's a superior way. It's our contribution to world peace. When I was at the citizenship office 2 days ago, you know, I walked up to the counter to get my application. At first, I had to go to get a snapshot, pictures made. So I went to a Photoshop on Willis
Willis Street. And I said, I want some passport pictures. She said, okay. And then I said, oh, but they have to be a certain size, because, you know, and I gave them the citizenship folder, you know. I said, oh, yeah, we know all about it. What? Citizenship? Where are you from? I said, I was born in New York. New York! They're like young girls in their early 20s. New York! And you want to stay here? We want to go there! They just astonished. What do you see here? What do you like about here? Tell us about New York. They were so enraptured by the idea of New York that, you know, I was wearing T-lock, kurta, bead bag, and, you know, saffron pants, and still there. Well, where are you based here, Wellington? Maybe we can get you to change your mind. You'll take one of us to New York. Well, they were just astounded, you know. Can't believe it, you know. They were asking, like, what do you see here? What do you expect to find here? Oh, I'd love to go to New York. So then when I got the photos, I went to the citizenship office, you know, in the Department of Internal Affairs, just went up to the counter and gave my application. You know, I just told the lady, now here, I'm a refugee from the USA. She's laughing. Because they're so used to, like, dealing with people, you know, coming from Afghanistan or Vietnam, or, you know, trying to get their way into the promised land. So when someone had, you know, hands them a, you know, an American passport, it's a bit, huh? It's all been a hallucination in the material world. Everybody thinks the other place is better. I could just see those young girls working in the Photoshop in New York City. One of the most expensive cities in the world. It's great in terms of Maya. You've got a lot of money, otherwise forget it. They call it the city that never sleeps. You can walk out 4 o'clock in the morning and it'll be as calm at 4 o'clock in the morning as Wellington is at 12 noon. In other words, you know. And during midday, you can forget it. You can't conceive of how passionate it is. The calmest it gets is early in the morning. It's like Wellington during midday. So, people, they like that. Many New Zealanders and Australians, they say, oh, New York, when I just step out in the street from my hotel, I feel such an energy rush. There's so much energy in that city. Yeah, there's so much sin. That's what you feel. You're just knocked down by the mode of passion. But people think that's really invigorating. Oh, passion, yes. The bright lights. Whether this place or that place, we're all refugees from Kali Yuga. And we have to remain humble and perform devotional service so that we can see the material desires that are harassing us. And then we can make further progress by battling those desires. Seeing them is half the victory. If you can see them, that's Krishna's mercy on you. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Te sam evanukam partham aham vajana jantosa. Krishna says, I, from within your heart, turn on the torchlight of knowledge, and then you can see. That's the result of devotional service. Then you can see what's been bugging you. And once you see what's been bugging you, then you can start to slug back. Then you can understand how to avoid the problems. So Krishna is not callous and insensitive. No, the Lord says in the Gita, Yayatamam prabhajante, thumbs the time of pajamyam. As you surrender to me, as you act towards me, I reciprocate. By your doing devotional service, Krishna reciprocates. What does he do? He says, I turn on from within your heart the torch, Gyanadipa, the torch of the light of transcendental knowledge. Then you can see the naked forms of these material desires. Then you can really get to work eradicating them. As soon as Arjuna turned his attention towards the instructions of the Lord, as they are inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita,
His true color of eternal association with the Lord became manifest, and thus he felt freed from all material contamination. Any questions? Yes.
In what way does the guidance help you to see what's wrong?
It's like a little kid. Needs the guidance of parents. Otherwise a little kid, you know, gets into trouble. Gets attracted by things which are dangerous or does things which are dangerous. Doesn't know how to use his or her time properly. Kids don't want to go to school. They just want to play. The parents have to tell them the best thing for your future is that you go to school. Prabhupada always gave the example how he didn't want to go to school and he would always try to escape going to school as a little kid. His father even had a servant bring him to school, escort him to school. Sometimes he wouldn't want to go and his mother would say, oh, that's all right. She was very lenient. And his father said, no, he must go to school. And so little kids don't want to go to school. I still remember the first time I went, when I went to first grade. I don't remember the first time I went to kindergarten, but first grade. One neighbor was driving us. My mother sent me to a religious school, Lutheran school, so I remember sitting on the lap of somebody in the front seat of a car. So sitting on the lap of some adult. And as I remember to this day, as soon as the car drove up in front of the school, I remember saying, this is the school I do not like. And I'd never been there, but I just remember saying that. This is the school. I said with great authority from this, you know, this is the school I do not like. I just remember sitting on some adult's lap and seeing the school for the first time, just saying like that, this is a school I do not like. You know, the kids just want to play. They don't care about the future. Actually, at all stages in devotional life, guidance is required. You should never at any stage in your spiritual life think you're above taking advice. Lord Chaitanya demonstrates that. He said, my spiritual master told me I'm a fool. I should just chant Hare Krishna. But we think we're so great. It's an intricate thing. It's a very intricate thing, performing devotional service within the material world. It's like trying to be dry while underwater. So guidance is required. Anything else? Yes.
And I'm wondering how it can guard against my compassion.
Reading the books, analyzing material existence through Prabhupada's purports, and certainly by distributing books, you get to see it all in front of your eyes. See how the count ignorance, how much suffering is there, how much ignorance and suffering is there. You can see it all. So I can remember yesterday while we were chanting, you know, these young couples, or couples for the night, were walking by, you know. Remember, I saw there's just this one. It wasn't even from the material point of view, it wasn't even a good-looking young girl. And, you know, she was some guy who looked really washed out and depleted, but she had on some fancy blue pants. Anyone see that? And she's some real, you know, you didn't notice, Madhuri? you noticed, didn't you? I knew it. Some real boutique-ish type pants, right? And you could see, that was going to make her whole weekend. You notice the mentality? She wasn't just a plain-looking girl, and the guy was, nondescript, Asian-looking guy, you know? But she had on those special boutique pants, what, a kind of blue satiny-like with flower imprints on? I used to love too, you know. I find out, you know, that was it. I expected Madhuri to know this, but anyone else notice? Did you notice? So you've seen them come into the boutique and get that kind of stuff, right? And they think, this is going to do it. This will really clinch it. Generally, girls are pretty practical. You know, like, well, I'm not that good looking, but Yeah. Yeah, these pants will do it. So they feel secure upon making such a purchase, right? I've solidified my chances. I've really shored up my life. I've got so many boutique pants. They never know what the guy's thinking. What's the guy thinking? Guy's thinking, hey, you could be wearing sackcloth. You could be wearing a paper bag. I don't care. Doesn't matter what you wear. I don't care what you wear. The girl is silly and thinking, oh, you know, I'm wearing this and therefore, you know. Maybe, you know, it's simply bolstering up their ego, but they also think the guy is attractive because of it. It's not so. Yeah. So she had on her boutique pants and, you know, she was ready for the night. She's going to be appreciated. You know, others are going to look at her, you know. Still, she didn't look that, she didn't, even from the material point of view, she didn't look happy at all, did she? It's like going through all the motions, just, you know, you have to do those kind of things. What else is there to do? Did you notice, Mia? She didn't look that happy, even from the Maya point of view, did she? Just, you know, they both were just like robots, just, you know, it's Friday night, so, you know, we have to do the robot thing. So you can see that. I remember when I was a brand new devotee, someone told me that when you go out on Sankirtan, you get to see special Sankirtan television. I said, oh, what's that? You know, and you get to see, you know, the material life for what it is. So I was very eager to see that special Sankirtan television. And you can see. Mm-hmm. So when we were chanting yesterday, you could see some people, and when they walk by the party, and momentarily their face lights up, and then they clamp down themselves again, and they keep walking, but momentarily they have remembrance of Krishna, and then they keep walking. This is a loving exchange, giving the holy name, giving books, giving prasad, this is all love. Of course, love should be reciprocated, and some do. Well, while we were chanting yesterday, I noticed, did you notice some people walk by and their faces just lit up in such a heavenly way? Just momentarily, did you notice that? Yeah. They themselves even didn't know what was going on. Just remembrance of Krishna was coming to them. They don't know. Then other persons, I remember one guy walked by. Krishna in the heart is giving him intelligence. You don't want to hear about me. Plug up your ears quick. You wanted to forget me. You want to be a demon. Plug up your ears now. Some people walk by, they smile. Others walk by. Yeah. Krishna's fulfilling everybody's desire. You can see all that. Even some little kids, they walk by and they look at you like, what is this? And then some little kids walk by smiling and spontaneously happy. You can see all the living entities have their individual places on the path back to Godhead. Some are way in the back, some are going the opposite direction, some are stalled on the side of the road, and some are making little progress forward. You don't know, somebody out there could have saw you last night, and they'll come to the Sunday feast, and they'll be ready for full action. So you get to see all that. There's one, a devotee in Perth. He's American, but he became a devotee in Perth. He was leaving America to go to Australia. He had an Australian wife. So he was going to the Los Angeles airport. And he hadn't read any Krishna consciousness books before that, but he was reading a few New Age type books. So Sankirtan devotee stopped him and was showing him, yeah, Prabhupada's books, and so he was
So this person was just, you know, oh, no, I have books like that already. No, thank you. And the boy was trying to explain, well, this is special. You should read it. No. Right in my bags, I have a book just like this. And no, it's all right. And so then the devotee kept trying to convince him. Probably what happened was that the devotee constantly, unconsciously could detect this is a special person. Maybe it was Krishna was dictating to the devotee, this is a special person, keep talking to him. So the devotee could say, yeah, you should take this book. No. And finally the devotee said, look, I'll just give you the book. No, I don't have enough room in my bags. And then, of course, what happened? He was with his wife, his young wife, so, come on, hon, let's go. So, you know, naturally with the wife prodding, okay, we have to go. So he was going away, walking away. And then all of a sudden, when he got down the hall, the devotee started running after him, came up close to him and said, you shouldn't be so attached to your wife. And then this guy, he just turned to face the devotee, and the devotee thought he was turning to come after him to pound him. So the devotee, psh, stay up. But actually, what happened? He was turning because the devotee's words had pierced his heart, and he was actually turning to change his mind to take the book. But the devotee thought he's turning to, So then the devotee ran away. And so, because he actually turned because the words, don't be so attached to your wife. And the words pierced his heart. He's like had realization, like, he turned, in a moment of enlightenment. But the devotee didn't understand that. He thought he was turning to beat him up. So then, after the devotee ran away, and, he's there with his wife, then guess what happens? Then his wife says, you should have got the book anyway. She's the one who dragged him away. And then, this is how fickle material life is. And then when he blew his opportunity, then she said, oh, why didn't you just get the book anyway? Well, it's too late. But then somehow or other, I know what happened. He came to a Sunday feast in Perth, and he ran into me. And instead of giving the usual Sunday feast lecture that they do in many temples where, the guests sit on the floor in front of you and you're sitting up high on a big seat and, formal academic lecture, I just sat amongst the guests and, had a discussion group and sifted through the guests real quick and found out who had some right, and so he was there. So, after that, he just became a devotee. So you get to see all these adventures, these dramas on Sankirtan. Any other questions? Yes, Sankirtan devotees, they do get special mercy, but don't be proud. That's the big downfall for Sankirtan devotees, especially this pride. Oh, I'm a book distributor. You always think the service is special, but I'm not special. Other questions? Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.